From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, day three of the Senate impeachment trial. A member of the president's defense team, Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson, joins me in just a moment with the latest. Also, while the work in the Senate has come to a screeching halt to focus on the impeachment, that has been the case in the House since almost day one of the 116th session of Congress. House Minority Leader California Congressman Kevin McCarthy is here to explain. And on the life front, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest is being criticized for citing Planned Parenthood's history and business model that targets the communities of racial minorities. Lieutenant Governor Forrest is here. And we talked about this earlier in the week with the author of the South Dakota bill that protects minors from medical procedures and drugs designed to change their biological gender, most of which is irreversible. The measure passed out of committee yesterday. National Review reporter Madeline Kearns has the latest. Then Travis Weber will join me for a discussion of the importance of this child protection legislation. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Quickly, let me remind you of a couple of upcoming events. Pro-Life Con starts tomorrow here at the Family Research Council, 8:30 a.m. until noon. A lot of great speakers, including Secretary of Health and Human Services. Secretary Azar will be making a policy announcement here at FRC in the morning. Also coming up this weekend, next weekend, Stand Courageous Conference, Marcus Point Baptist Church in Pensacola, Florida. To find out more about those events, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, as I mentioned, we're now in day three of the Senate impeachment trial. In the wee hours of the morning, Chief Justice John Roberts had to step in after comments from the impeachment manager, Democratic Congressman Jerry Nadler, when he said this.
It is beyond belief that the president claims monarchical powers. I can do whatever I want under Article 2, says he, and then acts on that. Defies everything. Defies the law to withhold aid from Ukraine. Defies the law in a dozen different directions all the time. And lies about it all the time. And says to Mrs. Cipollone here to lie about it.
I think it is appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers and the President's counsel in equal terms to remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body. One reason it has earned that title is because its members avoid speaking in a manner and using language that is not conducive to civil discourse. I do think those addressing the Senate should remember where they are.
This past Monday night, it was announced that a detachment of high-profile House Republicans would formally join the president's legal team. Joining me now is one of those members, Congressman Mike Johnson, who represents the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana and serves on the House Judiciary Committee. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Great to be with you, as always.
That was probably the most exciting that the hearing has been when the Chief Justice had to call down, Jerry Nadler and some others for using, I wouldn't say necessarily language, but conducting themselves in a way that is not common in the Senate.
Well, you know, I serve on the House Judiciary Committee where Chairman Jerry Nadler does business every day on the House side. And I've heard him say a lot of things that have been very surprising and shocking, but that was among the most surprising that I've heard. I mean, consider what he said, where he said it, and the time in which he said it. You know, he basically convinced his jury or accused his jury, which is the Republican senators, of being involved in a cover-up of the facts. I mean, you don't have to be a law student to understand that's not how you win friends and influence people on a jury. It was really stunning, and I think it surprised even his co-managers, the Democrats who are prosecuting this case, and I'm pretty sure they all wish he hadn't said it.
Well, my sense in just watching this whole thing that has its and I haven't watched all of it, but what I have seen of it, I'd have to drink a lot of coffee to stay awake for all of it. But the reality is it has a political edge, and it's not – I don't think they're trying to convince the senators one way or the other. I think they're playing to the media, in my view.
Well, I think that's right. I think everyone knows the outcome of this. This is the most vapid, evidence-free case for impeachment that has ever been presented, certainly in the history of this country. It's the first time a single party has ever advanced an impeachment case like this, and it's specifically what the founding fathers and the framers of the Constitution warned us against, because they knew that it would weaponize the impeachment function of the Constitution. They were terribly afraid of that outcome because they knew it would open a Pandora's box, and that's what they've done here. So they can't walk it back. It's too late. They're trying to do as much damage as they can to President Trump going into the election cycle, hoping against hope that it'll have some sort of effect in the election outcome and the turnout. I think it's going to backfire on them, Tony. I really do. And the more this goes on, the longer it goes on, the more I think people are throwing their hands up and saying, what was all this about? As you said at the outside, we haven't done any work of substance in the House for almost a year because they've been on this impeachment quest, and the American people want us to get back to work. I pray we can very soon.
Well, you mentioned the effect upon the election. I mean, Gallup was out with a poll earlier this week that would suggest that what you say is true. The president actually is enjoying his highest approval rating since being in office. So if they're trying to take him out, they're certainly going about it the wrong way. Because what's happening, it appears that the American public, those that supported him, and even some on the fence, are now locking ranks around the president because they see this is nothing more than politics. From day one, since he laid his hand on the Bible and took the oath of office, they've been trying to remove him from the office of president.
They've been very, very open about it, very overt and shameless. They said from the moment he took office that they were going to impeach him. And before the fateful, now famous phone call on July 25th between President Trump and Ukraine's President Zelensky, before that ever took place, you had 95 House Democrats had already voted on resolutions to impeach Donald Trump. Before these events ever took place, Tony, there's not even a pretense of objectivity. They weren't here to uncover facts, and they're not really concerned about a phone call with Ukraine. They're trying to meet their predetermined political end, and they're doing it at the cost of the entire republic. And that's what we think is really the ultimate tragedy here.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana, my guest. He is a part of the president's legal defense team. And let me ask you about that, Mike. Several of your House members, colleagues, joined the president's team. What was the goal of this newly constructed defense team?
Well, a handful of us have been working with White House counsel and the president since mid-December, preparing the case, preparing the brief, the oral arguments. Jim Jordan and John Ratcliffe, Mark Meadows, Doug Collins, and myself were meeting regularly with Pat Cipollone and the team, putting all this together. And when the president announced this on Monday, it really was just the next step in that phase. There are really two aspects of what the president is doing with his defense. One is in the court, so to speak, which is inside the Senate chamber, and the other is in the court of public opinion. And what we're trying to do is make sure that we are advancing the president's message, because his message are the true facts. And it's been so obscured by the mainstream media that a lot of the American people have been lost in all of this. And our job is to go out and make sure that we are reinforcing the message that's being presented to the Senate, to make sure that the broader public gets it as well. And hopefully at the end of the day, that'll have the desired effect.
So today, let's talk about day three of this trial. Any surprises today in what's been presented?
Not at all. And, I was just reading before I came on with you a comment that Senator Roy Blunt said yesterday. He said, it's admirable that they're trying to put on this case. He said it sort of tongue in cheek. He said, but they really have about a 1 hour presentation. The only problem is we've heard it now 6 times yesterday and 8 times today, and it just goes on and on and on. Everyone can see now there's nothing there. I mean, God bless them, Tony. They don't have anything to present, and they've got to fill somehow 2 full days with such a vapid case. They did it to themselves. But here we are. I think they're putting the Senate to sleep, and they certainly have made the American people turn the channel.
Now, will the president's team utilize all of their time in making their case?
Well, Jay Sekulow just said in a presser we had just within the last hour that remains to be determined. Look, our side, unlike the other, has no interest whatsoever in just running out the clock. We don't want to speak just to hear ourselves speak. We want to put on the facts and the evidence, the true record here. And if that takes less time than is allowed on the clock, then we'll conclude early. But a lot of it has to do with what they do today. We've been expecting that maybe they would come out with something new, some novel argument, some theory of their case, and there's nothing yet. So this is a really easy case to refute, and it may not take all the time to do it, but we'll see.
So anything, is there anything that the average American should be looking for, you know, our listeners out here, anything that they should be anticipating here in the next few days?
Well, what remains to be seen is how this will go. We've had a lot of questions this afternoon about the schedule. It's ultimately up to the Senate to decide that. They do it all by majority vote. If they want to go 12 hours on Saturday, we're prepared to do that. If they just want to take a couple of hours kind of for an opening salvo, we'll do that and return on Monday. Someone asked if we're concerned about how large the TV audience would be on a Saturday as opposed to a Monday. Look, it's immaterial to us. We want to put on the case. We're ready to do it under any circumstances that the Senate decides. So we're here to do it, and we're ready to go, and the president is anxious for his case to be presented.
Now, I've noticed, and I haven't watched a lot, but I've watched some on C-SPAN as I've watched some of the hearing or some of the trial. And it looks like the cameras are staying focused on the House managers and the attorneys that are speaking. I'm not seeing many shots of the senators out there. I'm wondering, are they staying awake?
Anecdotally, I can tell you that many of them are having a very hard time staying awake. It is so dreadfully boring. And the fact that the Democrats, the House managers, are doing a rehash over and over and over of the same allegations and theories and unfounded, questions they presented. It's just very difficult for even the most astute senator to follow along. I mean, look, this thing, you talk about beating a dead horse. I think they have long since passed that point. And so hats off to the senators who are giving it a good try, but I don't know how they're holding out.
It's way beyond beating a dead horse. In fact, I see glue stains all over the floor there in the Senate. Mike Johnson, thanks so much for joining us.
You got it, Tony. Thanks so much.
All right. We'll check in with you again real soon. Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana. I'm amazed, quite frankly, that the senators are agreeing to this to sit still for that long. I mean, I know many of them, and we're kind of all geared the same way. To have to sit through hour after hour of that, not have access to your phone or computer, and just have to sit there and listen. Man, that's painful for those who are ADD. But anyway, hey, let me give you the results of yesterday's poll as we go into this break. Remember the poll question I had, given President Trump's many constitutionally solid appointments to the U.S. courts, do you believe Roe v. Wade will be overturned in your lifetime? Well, here's the results. 81% said yes, 7% no, and 12% not sure. Well, I'm with the 81%. I do think it's going to happen. All right, coming up next, you've heard the old adage that you can walk and chew gum at the same time. Well, Congress can't impeach and govern, at least not effectively at the same time. Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy is here to explain. Next on Washington Watch, don't go away, more to come. Be sure and check out the website, TonyPerkins.com.
Join FRC live via webcast for the 15th annual Pro-Life Con Digital Action Summit. On January 24th from FRC's headquarters in Washington, you'll hear from political leaders, bloggers, journalists, and activists who will share how they view social media and other digital tools to further the pro-life message. You'll be empowered to better reach your own communities by learning best practices from those who are at the cutting edge of the digital pro-life movement. Tune in Friday, January 24th at 8 a.m. at prolifecon.com.
We all need to be lectured sometimes. Family Research Council's new podcast features selected talks by top thinkers from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast podium takes on tough issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Listen with us to the lecture, then stick around afterward as we break down the content. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Ever hear the term toxic masculinity? Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Masculinity is under attack in our culture. The American Psychological Association released guidelines declaring traditional masculinity ideology as harmful. Brown University, an Ivy League school, offered a course, Unlearning Toxic Masculinity, explaining that rigid definitions of masculinity are toxic to men's health. And a University of Texas class, Masculine UT, treated masculinity as if it were a mental health crisis. Thankfully, the culture does not have the last word on true masculinity. God does. Our Stand Courageous Men's conferences offer biblical solutions to the crisis of manhood. We seek to help men develop character, cultivate habits, build relationships, and make commitments that will move them closer to God's design. Check out StandCourageous.com for an event in your area. That's StandCourageous.com. What other trip to Israel can you take that combines walking where Jesus walked with meeting today's Israeli leaders? This is Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, inviting you to spend an incredible 9 days in Israel with me, General Jerry Boykin, and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from June the 2nd through the 12th. You'll discover the roots of your faith and learn from experts about the geopolitical landscape of the region. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at FRCblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, we were just getting the latest on the Senate impeachment trial. But there is more to the story than what is going on in the Senate. It's what's not happening in Congress for the last 3 years. As we've talked about, since day one, the Trump administration, the focus of the left has been on impeaching Donald Trump. The result has been a lot has not been done for the American people. Joining me now to talk about this is the House Minority Leader. He represents the 23rd District of California, our good friend, Kevin McCarthy. Kevin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony. And I just want to start by thanking you and all your listeners for what they are doing, not just for this country, but for the world and their help and their prayers. So thank you so very much.
Well, thank you for that. And I do want to mention before we jump into our topic here, I mean, this is the Sanctity of Human Life Week. We're focusing on it. A big march tomorrow. President, you'll be the first president to speak at a march. You've been advancing the life issue for years since you've been in Congress. It's been one of your top priorities as in the role of leader. And I just want to commend you and thank you for what you've been doing on that front, on the number of fronts, but that one in particular.
Well, I thank you. And I thank all your listeners for all the help. You know, when we were in the majority, we had the most pro-life Congress in the history. And, you know, speaking for those who cannot speak for themselves. And we've really made great strides. And I am so fortunate, and we all are, to have the most pro-life president sitting in the office right now. And for him on this Friday to speak, to be the first president to speak live at the March for Life, we've got to be excited by that. And we know that our message is getting across and we're getting real progress. So,
from this administration, it's not just talk, it's action. I mean, they're driving this issue of the sanctity of life. The president gets it. He's advancing it. He is passionate about it. But I want to talk about some of the things you're passionate about, some of the things, and that is representing not just your constituents, but the American people. But a lot of those initiatives have gotten nowhere because day one, when Donald Trump raised his hand and took the oath of office, the process to impeach him began, and that has been the primary focus of the House majority led by Nancy Pelosi from the very beginning of this Congress.
It is the only thing that they accomplished. And what people need to understand, when you become, they tried to impeach him from the very beginning. Then they win the majority. And when you become the majority, your own conference, you campaign to become the chair of committees. Nadler literally in his brochure to his members said the reason why he should become chairman of Judiciary Committee, where all impeachment goes, is because he'd be the best to impeach the president. These freshman members who got sworn in, that gave him the majority, on the very night they were sworn in, they told their crowd that came to celebrate with them that their goal was to impeach the president. We watched Adam Schiff lie in so many different ways because this has been their only thing they want to do. Now, having said all that, what are all the things that haven't been done? An infrastructure. This country is crumbling in a lot of places. When we watch what this president is doing, there's no greater contrast. Here's the president over in Switzerland talking to all the world leaders who are all jealous because when we were in the majority, we were able to get tax reform and we have an economy stronger than we had in the last 50 years. But he wanted to solve prescription drugs. He wanted to get infrastructure done. When he went to fight to get our military being rebuilt, it was delayed because of Pelosi. When we had the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, and this is a really interesting point, Canada and Mexico are our number one and number two traders. And he's sitting there negotiating with China. We would have had a stronger position for the president to negotiate with China if we had the United States-Mexico trade agreement ratified. But the problem was Nancy Pelosi held it because she had all the power. But he still got both of them done. But when you think about prescription drugs, you think about infrastructure, you think about we have a fentanyl bill sitting in judiciary that they've never had a hearing on. But it already passed the Senate. Why? Because all they focused on impeachment. Here we have a challenge with Iran in the Middle East. But the Intel Committee, what are they working on? Adam Schiff has only been working on impeachment. He hasn't been working on any of that. It's all the things that are failing because nothing else can get through.
Let me focus on one of those aspects because it's something that's very pressing, very urgent, and something that I've been talking about frequently on the program is that while this focus is on impeaching the president, and you just mentioned Adam Schiff not being focused on what's happening globally, I mean, I think we're seeing we're in the midst, I think, of potentially a second Arab Spring where you see what's happening in Lebanon. You see what was happening in Iraq, now Iran. And last week, or maybe it was the week before last, I know you had a resolution to stand with the Iranian people who were pushing back against that totalitarian regime, and it was blocked in the Congress.
It was blocked by Democrats. You know how something happens in your life that is so powerful? And there's these moments in time, you know, one was when I accepted Christ. But there are political moments. When I watched Tiananmen Square, I watched this young man stand before a tank that he understood what America meant, right?
Right.
Here we watched kids in Iran where they have an American flag painted, an Israeli flag. The government did this because they wanted the public to walk over them. What'd they do? They walked around
right. And
they chanted, "Our enemy is in Iran. It is not in America." Why wouldn't we stand with those people or with those in Hong Kong? The only reason why they would not is because the president stands for freedom. But the Democrats are so frustrating that this is what it did. I put a simple resolution on the floor, not political at all. It did three simple things it would accomplish. Condemns the government of Iran for shooting down the Ukrainian International Airline Flight 752, where they killed the innocent civilians. It expressed support for the Iranian protesters, and it called on the Iranian regime to not use force against its own people, because just a few months ago, they killed 1,500 of their own citizens
right. Because
they wanted to stand for freedom.
Dangerous.
Democrats blocked that. Not one Democrat would vote for it.
Very, very dangerous what's happening, and that's why I think it's so important that we continue to draw America's attention to what is happening globally, not just, you know, I know the media and everything's fixated on the Democrats' efforts to impeach the president, but we can't have tunnel vision. We still have to focus on what's happening around the world. Kevin McCarthy, out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us. And again, appreciate your leadership on Capitol Hill.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for all what you do too.
All right, folks, more Washington Watch to come. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this.
Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with 5 kids under the age of 9, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a 6-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and host of Washington Watch. I invite you to join our family and thousands of others across the country in standing on the Word of God as we go into 2020, the global year of the Bible, by joining in a 2-year family chronological Bible reading plan. I can assure you that your family will be powerfully impacted by reading God's Word and growing in the understanding of His truth together. The readings take only 15 to 20 minutes a day, with Sundays set aside for a family or small group discussion. To join us, simply go to TonyPerkins.com and click on Stand on the Word with FRC. That's TonyPerkins.com or call 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. Let's stand together on the Word of God and change the world, beginning in our own home. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, speaking Monday at the Upper Room Church of God in Christ in Raleigh, North Carolina, which happened to be Martin Luther King Jr. Day, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest said this. He said, Planned Parenthood tried to commit genocide on African Americans through abortion. Now, that statement has brought swift criticism from the left, the protectors of Planned Parenthood. But there is no hiding the fact that Planned Parenthood's founder, Margaret Sanger, was a eugenics enthusiast. Sanger once wrote in a chapter titled, quote, The Wickedness of Creating Large Families, I take that personal, by the way, that the most, going on to quote her, the most merciful thing that the large family does to one of its infant members is to kill it. Wow, what a compassionate woman. Joining me now is North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. Governor, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's always great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Why is it that the left is so hostile to history?
It's really pretty remarkable, actually. You know, obviously, I probably used a little bit of hyperbole in my speech there, but the reality is Margaret Sanger's words are true. Nobody's making them up. In fact, anybody that's listening, if they want to go out and just be shocked by things that can come out of somebody's mouth, go read all the quotes from Margaret Sanger. They're actually very shocking out there. And as you well know, she was the founder of the organization that created Planned Parenthood. And we know that regardless of the debate that's gone on about how she felt about the black community, regardless of that, 19 million babies have died through abortion because of abortion in America. And so the facts really speak for themselves. And that's the atrocity. But the interesting thing is the left just wants to hold Margaret Sanger up as if she's some hero. And here's the really interesting point. That about 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, we passed legislation in North Carolina about a eugenics program that was actually used against black families in our state, and the horrific things that happened during that, and we actually paid out the remaining living members of those families. And the media was all on board, thought it was the greatest thing in the world that we would do that. And Republicans led that charge. And here, when you talk about somebody like Margaret Sanger doing it, all of a sudden she's a hero. Because they're really just trying to, you know, perfect the human race, and how somehow that's a good thing.
Can I tell you what I like about you, Governor Forrest, is you don't back down. Now, you were attacked swiftly for these comments. Surprise, surprise. But many Republicans, of course, the current president not included in this number, but they'll start, oh, I'm sorry if I offended anyone, or they'll restate it, or they'll go silent. But you tweeted out in response to the criticism, quote, "The facts speak for themselves. Since 1973, 19 million black babies have been aborted, mostly by Planned Parenthood." You go on to write in your tweet, "I care too much about the lives of these babies to debate the intent of Sanger's view, when the devastation she brought into this world is obvious," end quote. You know, it's time to speak truth. And that's what you were doing. I applaud that. And again, people can check out the historical record. They can also look at a map of where Planned Parenthood clinics are located. And I think it's about 80% are within walking distance of minority communities.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't looked at the map, and to me, it's kind of, you know, it doesn't really matter that much. The reality to me is the numbers speak for themselves. The black community is represented by that disproportionately to the population of the United States. And I think, like you said, it's time for people to wake up, and I think they are. In fact, Prager University came out with a great video on Roe v. Wade that everybody should go out there and watch, the history of Roe v. Wade and how the entire atrocity that we face about abortion today in America is built on a bunch of lies. Right. And I would encourage your listeners to go out there and watch that video and share it with everybody. And, you know, I think because of tools like radio that we have today, conservative radio, shows like yours and groups like PragerU and others, that the public is starting, their eyes are starting to open up on this issue of abortion, and we're starting to really sense the dehumanization that's happened in our society over the last 50 years, and hopefully we can get back to some, moral strength in this country and understand what we've done here.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think what's happened is the media has exposed their left. I was going to say left-leaning, but it's not left-leaning. They are totally in the camp of the left, and people are now tuning out the mainstream media, looking for other alternative news sources, and they've stumbled upon the truth, as there are a plethora of options out there from those that will not be hamstrung by political correctness. Let me ask you, the president announced he is going to be at the March for Life, first president ever to speak at the March for Life. Yeah. When you look at the appointments he's made to the courts, you look at this president's bold stand for life. I mean, are you optimistic that America may soon be a predominantly pro-life nation again?
I think so. I think leadership matters. I think people pay attention to leadership, and I think we're seeing this for the first time in a number of years, and President Trump has stepped up to lead the way. I think people listen.
All right. You hear that music, means we're out of time. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, as always, great to talk with you. And again, thanks for standing firm for truth there in the great state of North Carolina.
Thank you, Tony. Great talking to you. Have a great day.
All right. And by the way, we'll be in North Carolina this weekend in Kernersville, North Carolina, for a men's conference. General Boykin, myself, and some of the FRC team. All right. Coming up, South Dakota took one more step toward protecting minors from the left's transgender craze. We'll hear from Madeline Kearns and Travis Weber next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
What are you reading this winter? Looking for timely and original commentary on human dignity, marriage, and religious liberty? We've got you covered at frcblog.com. The content on our blog is written by our policy experts, FRC staff, as well as outside contributors. Read about a wide variety of topics like crimes in the criminal state of China, how Game of Thrones mainstreamed sexual exploitation, transgender regret, the rise of the detransitioners, and many more. Stand for truth by staying informed at frcblog.com.
A strong case can now be made that China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. The Chinese Communist Party restricts religious practice and oppresses religious minorities on a sweeping scale, targeting those of every faith, especially Christians, Muslims, Tibetan Buddhists, and Falun Gong. The Chinese Communist Party's movement against religion has had and continues to have devastating consequences for those who simply wish to live according to their conscience. The Chinese Communist Party's consistent abuses of human rights prove that it cannot be treated just like any other country. The United States must address these human rights and religious freedom violations in their trade and diplomatic dealings with China. For more information about the human rights crisis in China, visit frc.org/China. That's frc.org/China.
In the U.S., the rate of chemical abortions is at an all-time high. This increase is being driven by the abortion industry, which wants abortion pills available through the pharmacy in the mail, making do-it-yourself abortions the future of the abortion industry. Abortion advocates once claimed that legal abortion would prevent back-alley abortions, but the health complications that often result from chemical abortion are eerily similar to those of back-alley abortions. For more information, visit frc.org/chemical-abortion. Last year, my brother Josh, a 37-year-old married father with 5 kids under the age of 9, announced he was becoming a woman. Josh changed his name to Melissa and now requires everyone to use she, her pronouns when referring to him. If the grandparents refuse to do this, they've been threatened with limited access to their grandchildren. My tall, handsome, muscular brother began taking strong female hormones that transformed him into a different person. He began wearing dresses, wigs, heels, and makeup in public. He will have to stay on female hormones until the day he dies. He refuses to answer to the name Josh now. He says Josh is dead. There was even some type of symbolic burial ceremony to say goodbye to Josh, once and for all. You've been listening to an excerpt from a 6-part series telling the true account of a family impacted by the transgender movement. To read this important blog series, visit frc.org/cult.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, by a vote of 8-5, the House State Affairs Committee in South Dakota passed House Bill 1057. It prohibits doctors from performing gender reassignment surgeries and prescribing puberty-blocking drugs to minors, most of which is irreversible. The bill now goes to the full House. Joining me now to talk about the reason this has become a legislative issue is Madeline Kearns, a William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism at the National Review Institute. Madeline, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Madeline, you've been tracking this issue. You have been writing about the measure in South Dakota. In fact, wrote about the hearing yesterday. You say this is a victim-led movement. What do you mean by that?
Exactly. I think it's really important when we're dealing with this issue, which is obviously becoming a bit of a partisan wedge, is that we emphasize that it really is people who have been personally and directly affected by this who are coming forward, who are giving testimony. And it's listening to their concerns that Fred Deutsch, Republican legislator who co-sponsored the bill, is listening to people who have been personally harmed by this ideology that is the basis for these laws and the resistance. There was a piece today in the Washington Post suggesting that this was a sort of Republican conspiracy. And I'm always very keen to make the point that actually, no, it's lots of non-religious people, it's lots of people who would identify with the political left who are saying, hold on a minute here, we really need to leave developing children's bodies alone.
Yeah, I've noticed that. In fact, I picked up on that myself, where they are quick to ascribe a political ideology to those that are speaking out about this. We're seeing that here in D.C. as this has become more and more of an issue. women's sports is one of the areas we see this whole issue kind of coming to a head. And there are many people of many, many different backgrounds speaking out about this for a variety of concerns. What was the overriding concern that was expressed yesterday in the committee there in South Dakota?
I think the overriding concern was that these interventions, so we're talking specifically about chemical and surgical interventions with children under the age of 16, are irreversible. And the argument is a common sense argument. It's simply that a child is not in a position to make a permanent life-altering decision, compromise their fertility, compromise their sexual function at such a young age. And at the very least, we should be expecting people to wait till they're 16. And I think it's a very reasonable bill. If you read what they've actually outlined, I think that we had testimony from a formerly transgender teen, we had testimony from a transgender adult and a liberal progressive lawyer. So I think this is something that a lot of people should be able to agree with.
Let me ask you this question, Madeline. Does science play a role in this?
Yes, science does play a role in this, but of course, scientists and medical professionals are as political as any of the rest of us. And so what you have right now is a sort of infiltration of the medical establishment by activist types. I've written about that extensively at National Review, if anyone listening wants to check it out. But of course, the science, from my perspective, from our perspective, those who want to urge caution on this, is very clear. And really the burden of proof would be on the people saying it's necessary to sort of remove healthy body parts. And of course, there isn't proof. So they make these kind of grand ideological statements, which are not scientific, but they're claiming it is science, which is a problem.
Well, let me ask you this, because, you know, facts don't lie. Now, liars use facts in different ways, but there have not been long-term studies on the implications of the use of some of these drugs that are used to block puberty and the implication that could have down the road for these young people. So we're really experimenting with these children, almost turning them into lab rats, because we don't know what might be the outcome.
That's exactly right. So it's a guiding principle of caution would be the settled science on this, is that it's actually not particularly ethical to do an experimental study on children. I mean, the fact that that's controversial to some people is just astounding. So that's absolutely correct. In fact, the studies that we do have for children who have struggled with acute gender dysphoria spanning decades would actually suggest that the vast majority grow out of this condition when not subjected to these experimental treatments. That, of course, may change if we keep pumping kids full of hormones. And
well, they can change.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, some of this is irreversible. I mean, especially when
what may change is the evidence. So if you start doing these experimental things, then oh, sure, you're going to have studies in the future saying, oh, most of them don't grow out of it. But of course, that's because you did permanent intervention. So how could they grow out of it? So I think that the biggest takeaway from yesterday was just simply, it's not right to make this decision for a child. We really, at the very least, need to wait and see. I don't think that's a particularly unreasonable or radical position, but there you go.
Well, Madeline, I know you have written extensively about this topic. In fact, are one of the best reporters out there covering this topic, as we've I've read your stuff. Let me ask you this. Do you think that other states will pursue a similar path that we see South Dakota taking?
I think there's a suggestion that there will be kind of multi-state strategy on this, and I think there's a number of states that I can't remember them off the top of my head, so list, but I know there's a number of states wanting to pass similar legislation. The only concern I have, I mean, obviously, like the point of the legislation is right, but I think it is important to try and emphasize, and certainly that's what I try to do in my reporting, the facts and present the facts so that somebody reading something like the Washington Post article has also heard the facts and so knows what they're dealing with, rather than being told a whole lot of information, misinformation, and omission by people who have an agenda to push.
Yeah, that's very, very important because there is a growing body of research and evidence out here that would, as you said, urge caution. Madeline, thank you so much for joining us again. Great piece. I've got a link to it on my website. I'll encourage people to take a look at your work.
Great. Thanks so much.
Okay. Thank you, Madeline Kearns. To find out more, read her piece, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. You know, there's coming a point, and we're already there. You may have seen this out of Denver. A columnist who said that there were two sexes was fired. He said there's only two biological sexes. You got the chromosomes that prove it. And he was fired for being intolerant. There is a full court press by the left to squelch conversations as it pertains to the truth. So it's very important that you have this, the sources like National Review in this case that has reporters, Washington Watch here, bringing you the newsmakers and the reporters so that you can hear firsthand. All right, I'm going to continue this conversation, but first I want to, for those that didn't hear this earlier, I want to give the results of yesterday's poll question. I ask you this. Given President Trump's many constitutionally solid appointments to U.S. courts, do you believe Roe v. Wade will be overturned in your lifetime? And here are the results. 81% of you said yes. 7% said no. 12% not sure. Well, I'm with, as I said earlier, I'm with the 81%. I do think it will happen in our lifetime. And to the point that Andy Biggs made yesterday, he said, Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona said, if President Trump's reelected, because that's probably when the next vacancy on the court is going to happen in the next term. So you need to be engaged and involved. Also, remind folks coming up the end of this month, January the 31st, February the 1st, we are going to have our Stand Courageous Men's Conference in Pensacola, Florida. If you're within driving distance, I encourage you to go and be a part of the event. Join us. Find out more. Go to TonyPerkins.com. All right. Joining me now in studio to talk about this effort to protect children from the transgender craze of the left is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Madeline said that she sees other states potentially following this. There are states that have already introduced legislation such as this. We've been working with the lawmaker, Representative Deutsch, there in South Dakota. This is part of the model legislation that your team in the policy department has put forward. Let's first go through, explain to our listeners what the bill does, and then the next steps for the bill.
Sure, Tony. So this bill is it's very great to see this moving in South Dakota. This has significant overlaps with the work that we've done on the issue in terms of how we think it should be addressed legislatively. Primarily, this bill bans the use of hormones and similar treatments and gender reassignment surgery on minors, those under the age of 16. There have been some tweaks to the bill since being introduced. Bans them on those under 16 years old and makes this a misdemeanor under South Dakota law. So this is an issue that is crucial, and it's crucial that we as Americans address this issue. If we think back to last year, I think the public consciousness was captured by the James Younger situation out of Texas, in which he became a pawn between his parents as his mother wanted him to wear girls' clothes, have a girl's name, and eventually take puberty blockers. His father wanted to protect him. The plight of that child and the fact that children are caught up in this web in which ideologues are trying to push these things on children, I think highlighted the importance of this issue nationally. That galvanized the effort I think South Dakota's effort is leading the way in terms of how to address this, of the efforts currently underway to address these treatments in children. And we really want to see this bill move ahead.
So the next step is it goes to the House floor. If it proceeds from there and receives a favorable vote, it'll go to the Senate committee, and the Senate floor, then to the governor. But here's the deal, and I know this as a former state legislator that actually introduced a number of first-in-the-nation types of bills. The left is going to pounce on this with all four because they want to try to stop it in South Dakota.
They've already been pouncing on it, bringing in stories and accounts of those who claiming emotional and other types of harm from this. But the reality is this requires people to be empathetic but prudential in their judgment, to understand the truth, to get at the truth, and not be swayed by the slightest wind of feeling or emotion or opposition. Name calling is going to come the way of those supporting this bill. They're going to be accused of being hard-hearted. They probably already have. And that's what we've seen with the people going into South Dakota claiming they're being harmed. The reality is forcing these treatments on children is what's harming children. And
right,
this
absolutely
needs to be focused on like a laser. And it's critical that this point be made. Thankfully, the coalition of people recognizing the harm coming from this is broadening. Even more feminist groups like Wolf, the Women's Liberation Front, are going in and testified for this bill. The Kelsey Coalition, others, they're not all otherwise aligned politically. People are saying we can rally around the truth that these are harming children, procedures are harming children.
And we actually have a few stations in South Dakota. So, folks, this is where it becomes a, as we talk about often, a participatory process. You need to weigh in with your members of the South Dakota legislature. House Bill 1057 is the bill number. And so it's, as I said, it goes to the House floor. You need to contact your state representative and encourage them to support this bill. And folks, it's going to be coming to other states. This is to defend, to protect children from the left's transgender craze. And again, this isn't play. This isn't make believe. Even though they're picking different genders and making things up, when you start cutting off body parts and start taking these drugs, this is for life in many cases.
Tony, the Kelsey Coalition. If people go to kelseycoalition.org/testimonials, that's Kelsey spelled K-E-L-S-E-Y coalition.org/testimonials. There are stories and account after account of children who've been caught up in this and been victimized by the ideologues pushing transgender treatments and ideology on children. It's critical that this point get out because this is the truth. This is the truth that we hope more and more people will see. It's tragic that we have to suffer through the consequences of these issues, of this right issue being forced on children until the truth is seen. We believe it will come into the light. Light will be shown on this darkness for what it is. But it's tragic that we have to bear any consequences in the meantime.
Well, we have to be informed and we have to be involved. That's the only way we can protect children, protect our families, protect our country and our future. Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us and great work.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, we are coming up to the end of the program. I want to thank you for joining us. Let me encourage you to check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.
1-800-324.